Welcome back to the Iowa Blog. I'm your host, Craig Wynn. This will be our third episode of our review of Dode's song, the 89th Mizmor. It is the most important piece of literature ever written. I would put it up next to the Torah and to say that it is actually more relevant to our understanding of who God is, what he is offering, what he expects in return, and how he made our reconciliation with him possible, than the Torah itself. It is the living manifestation of the Torah. It's like God reaching out to you to tell you everything you need to know about him and what you need to do and understand for him to be part of your life and for you to live eternally with him. There is nothing ever written that compares to the enlightenment and the enrichment and the empowerment of the 89th Mizmor. So we're going to return where we were at the conclusion of our second program. And the statement reads, I have established, this is now God speaking to us, having written this in year 968 BCE. That is year 3000 Yah. It's when the cornerstone was established of the home for Yahweh's name on Mount Moriah, and exactly 1,000 years before, in 33 CE, year 4000 Yah, the Dode returned to fulfill Pesach, Matzah, Bekorah, making all of this possible. God says, I have established, cutting through separation, the Bereth covenant for the family and home through Ani Bashar, my chosen one, the person I prefer and that I have decided upon. I have sworn an oath, and I will affirm this promise seven times over to Dode, the beloved. Ebed Ani, my authorized agent and co-worker who serves on my behalf. Recognizing how powerful this statement is. When we just think about it for a moment, God is saying that the single most important thing in the universe, far more important than the sun, far more important than life itself, is the covenant, because it is the only means to extend our lives and for us to come to know the Creator God of the universe. That this family covenant relationship, Bereth, is being offered by Yahweh through his work with his beloved son, Dode. And that we have Yahweh's promise on this, that Dode is the means by which we come to know Yahweh, receive his kindness and generosity, and we are adopted into his family. So recognizing that the words that filled this last sentence are highlighted again, and the message is underscored in the next, we read, furthermore, as an eternal witness to the restoring testimony, Adullam, I will prepare and establish Kun, your offspring, and that which you sow. In addition, I will construct a home for your throne and seat of honor on behalf of all generations throughout all time. This is so essential to our understanding, because what Yahweh is saying is that not only will he enable this covenant relationship through Dode, making him the most important man in God's story, and not only are these promises to him and for our benefit offered in his name, but these promises are eternal. It means there's no room for Rabbinic Judaism or Talmud. There's no room for a New Testament or Christianity. There's no room for a Jesus Christ or a Bar Kokhba. There's certainly no room for an Allah and a Quran. Yahweh's promises to Dode regarding the establishment of the covenant relationship, which is the single most important thing to us and to our Creator, is part of an eternal promise and part of the restoring testimony that Yahweh provided. The second part of this is also important because what it says is that God rewards his children. He recognizes and appreciates when one of his children, in this case, his foremost son, does something that is worthy, contributes in a meaningful way, advances his business, which is the redemption of humankind. And in this case, the reward is a permanent seat of honor. Oh, who is enthroned in heaven before Yahweh to reign forevermore? It's David. He is our king. Now, my job is to serve as his herald. He is the boss. And this is the way Yahweh likes to operate. Yahweh likes to work through people, and his favorite person, his chosen one to work through, is Dode. Then he goes on to say, in addition, I will construct a home for the throne, for your throne and seat of honor on behalf of all generations throughout all time. Doesn't matter when you live, where you live. Dode is the one. And Yahweh not only recognizes it, he wants us to appreciate it as well. This is Mizmor 89:4, lyrics to be sung. So Dode not only provides everlasting testimony through the lyrics of his songs, but also his life serves as a restoring witness. What he has sown, we can reap. And in the covenant, we become his heirs. Now, beyond all of this, there is but one throne in heaven, one universal seat of honor, and it was constructed by Yahweh for his firstborn son, Dode. There is no seat of honor for Jesus. Well, that'd be kind of hard too, because he was nothing but a myth and a counterfeit. There certainly is no seat for Paul, who was demon-possessed. He'll be going to the other place. And I can assure you there is no Saint Peter. He was a scoundrel. There is no place of honor before God for the founder of Rabbinic Judaism, Akiba, or the person who codified the Jewish religion, Maimonides. And I am personally telling you that Muhammad has absolutely no relationship with God, and that he created the most disgusting religion in all of human history. So, every one of them, well, save Jesus, since he never existed, is going to spend eternity in Sheol, hell. I will give you, or granted, that myths are exempts, so Jesus is without a soul. We have every reason to suspect that both the verbal and the noun aspects of Zera, which were used to speak of what Dode would sow and his offspring, were intended, and that one invariably leads to the other. When the seeds are properly sown, tended, and cultivated, then they produce a bountiful crop. As such, we would be wise to consider both Dode's life and his lyrics, because they lead to the same amazing and productive result. Now, in this light, as I shared in our last program, Zeruah, which is sacrificial lamb, is Dode's most important title, and it is based on the actionable root of Zerah. And this is why his most magnificent and revealing accolade is being introduced to us through its root at this time, Zerah. In fact, in this Mizmor, we're going to hear about Zeruah twice more. Zerah is also the fulcrum upon which the perversions that were associated with the ultimate villain in this story, someone who will be called out by name to be condemned. This is the author and inspiration of almost all of the Christian New Testament, Paul. His attack on Yahweh's Torah began with the Hebrew word zera. As the Hebrew word for seed and seeds, it can accurately be translated as offspring, children, descendants, posterity, family, progeny, as well as sowing seeds as a verb, cultivating those seeds, and just as the seed themselves, both literally and symbolically as a result of this word. It is from the verbal implication of sowing seeds that we come to appreciate the fact, as is the case in English, to seed is to plant many seeds, just as a bag of seed contains hundreds, if not thousands, of them. Nevertheless, Shaul, who is now known as Paul, attempted to base his religion on the notion that seed is singular. So we ought to be aware of Zerah's implications. In spite of the obvious plural connotations of seed and its transliteration as offspring, descendants, posterity, and children, Paul claimed that the Torah could be ignored because his Iesu Christus, Jesus Christ, was the promised seed, singular, of Abraham and Dod. And in his twisted mind, nothing mattered before, during the interim, or since his mythical misnomer, Jesus Christ, was conceived. According to Paul, everything God had to say could be ignored by those who put their faith in his absurd assessment. So he just basically said, because seed is singular, when we were told that Abraham's offspring would receive the benefits of the covenant, old slick Shaul said, well, then we can bypass the entire Torah and we'll go directly to the promised seed, which I'm telling you is Iesu Christus, even though he never existed. That's the argument. That's the first time that Paul attempts to do away with the Torah. There'd be many more. So, validating our earlier acknowledgement that the seeds Dod had sung, and guess who was being spoken of here with the seeds, therefore not to be bypassed, since Yahweh said, I'm swearing a solemn oath to him, is Dod, and it's Dod's seeds that matter as it relates to the covenant, that Dod sowed these seeds through his lyrics. And his offspring are those who capitalize on the lyrics of the songs that he wrote so that they can be part of the covenant family. Yahweh said explicitly that he made Dod an ad olam, an eternal witness, such that Zerah, his seed, and whatever he sows, will develop into a family and home on behalf of Dor, every generation throughout time. This negates any possibility of anyone else, whether you want to substitute the name of Jesus or Muhammad, fulfilling this or any other promise. You can't make the claim that Yahweh was so stupid, so old, so much like Weekend and Bernie's in the current White House. Well, in the White House, while Biden fulfills his last days, that he just couldn't keep the names of his kids straight. And when he said Dod for David, he really meant to say Jebus. But you know how it happens when you get old. He's really, really old. So he just forgot the name. So we're going to help him along. And wherever he said Dod, we're going to replace it with Jesus. It sounds insane, doesn't it? Sounds like man is trying to be smarter than God. It's saying that man has a better memory than God, that man knows God's sons better than he does. Well, if you listen to this Mizmor song, I think you will disagree with that approach. And if you disagree with that approach, there is nothing left of the New Testament. Now, returning to the heart of the 89th Mizmor, the realization that Yahweh is constructing a home for his son, Dod, is absolutely essential to our understanding of Yahweh and his relationship with us. In the manner of a father and in defiance of humanity conceiving gods in their image, our Heavenly Father is declaring that he is taking responsibility for raising and protecting, even advocating on behalf of and lifting up his beloved son. And what he has accomplished with and for Dod through the covenant, he will do for us. Now, once we grasp this fundamental truth, rather than attempt the impossible and lift God up in praise, we ought to let Father and Son do what they have made possible. Our needs and his desire for our lives coalesce when we allow our Father to raise us as his children. This is the purpose of the Torah's guidance. It is the very reason the covenant was conceived. With this understanding, therefore, how is it that after God created the universe for us to enjoy, we humans became so full of ourselves that we have built not one, but hundreds of thousands of houses for God? Stupid is as stupid does, I suppose. Salah, a Hebrew word that means pause now and contemplate the implications. I have established, cutting through separation, the Bereth covenant for the family home through Ani Bashar, my chosen one, the person I prefer and have decided upon. I have sworn an oath, and I will affirm this promise 7 times over to Dod, the beloved, Ibid, Ani, my authorized agent and co-worker who serves on my behalf. Forevermore, as an Adolam, eternal witness to the restoring testimony, I will prepare and establish your offspring and that which you sow. In addition, I will construct a home for your throne and seat of honor on behalf of all generations throughout time. Even the way this ends takes our attention to the fact that by establishing Dod's sovereignty as Yahweh's chosen one and authorized leader, that we are the beneficiaries. We benefit when Dod is given the seat of honor. Now, contemplating Dod's contribution to building Yahweh's home, this became the very thing that caused me to reconsider the prophecy upon which my curiosity with and later devotion to Yahweh's testimony began. And if you'll join me, we will discover that there are some amazing parallels between the 89th Mizmor and the initially perplexing narrative found in Shamuel. Listen to him speak of God, 2 Samuel 7. Included among these is the fact that they are, in both cases, the teaching is that Yahweh is responsible for building a home for his family and not the other way around. Now, people are preoccupied with rebuilding the temple on the mount. Don't do that. God's going to do it. Now that we have come to know so much more about Yahweh's relationship with Dod and realize that we are about to confront his adversary, the son of evil, let's go back to where it all began over a score of years ago. Speaking of homes, man's and God's, Zerah seed sown, Ben's sons, and positions of honor. This is my favorite prophecy, and it is the one that brought us together, and it is paralleled throughout Dod's song. It came to pass when the king sat down and relaxed in his home, because Yahweh had given him a comforting respite from his adversaries and rancorous foes, that the king said to Nathan, it means gift the prophet, "Please look around. I live in a house of cedar, but the ark of God sits within curtains." He was speaking of the tabernacle of the restoring witness. That is 2 Samuel 7:2. So Nathan said to the king, "Choose to go and do all that is in your best judgment, because surely Yahweh is with you." However, that evening, the word of Yahweh came to Nathan. He conveyed, Samuel 7:4, "Go and tell Dod, my co-worker, that this is what Yahweh says. Why should you build me a house to live in?" 7:5. What do we have reinforced here? Tell Dod, that one man's name, that name is second only to Yahweh in the Torah and prophets. Tell Dod, the one name that was brought up in the 89th Mizmor, tell Dod, my what? Ibidani. Same reference, my co-worker found also in the 89th Mizmor, that this is what Yahweh, same name for God found in the 89th Mizmor, says, why should you build a home for me to live in? Indeed, I have not lived in a house since the time that I lifted up to be with me the children of Yisrael out of the crucibles of oppression in Mitzrayim. Then, as an ongoing witness to the restoring testimony, up to this very day, I have been moving about in a tent dwelling as a tabernacle and home. 2:7-6. During any of that time, when showing the way to the benefits of the relationship that I traveled with the children of Yisrael, did I say a single word to even one of the leaders of the tribes of Yisrael whom I instructed to shepherd my people? Yisrael, to say, so, why not build for me a house of cedar? Now, therefore, this is what you should say to my associate and co-worker, Dod. As a result, Yahweh of the spiritual implements says, I took you from the sheepfolds, from chasing after lambies, to be the conspicuous and informative leader among my people over Yisrael. I have been with you throughout it all, revealing the benefits of the relationship as you have journeyed through life. I have cut off, karat, that word again. Accordingly, all of your enemies from your presence, I have engaged on your behalf to make for you an exceptionally important name, the greatest distinction and the most distinguished reputation when compared to the most glorified designations pursuant to the relationship on earth. Furthermore, I will appoint and establish a dwelling place for my people, Yisrael. I will plant them such that they abide below throughout a less chaotic time than this, and no longer be agitated, anguished, or terrorized. They will not continue to be afflicted or degraded, disparaged or denigrated by unjust or harmful sons, perverted and violent descendants of evil, as will have formerly been the case. Now we've moved into the future, haven't we? From the day which, for the benefit of this relationship, I appointed and instructed the judges on behalf of my people, Yisrael, I will provide a respite from all of your enemies. That's going to occur in less than 9 years. In addition, Yahweh is boldly and publicly announcing to you that, indeed, he will act, engaging with you to create the family and home of Yahweh. Two fulfillments of this. This is 2 Samuel 7:11. There are two fulfillments of this. He engaged with Dod during Dod's second coming. during Pesach Matzen Bekorim to enable the benefits of the covenant. And Yahweh is returning with Dod to reestablish this covenant relationship in year 6000 Yah, 2033 CE, returning to the city of Dod to reaffirm the Bereth. Two fulfillments. Surely, your time will be thoroughly and completely fulfilled when you will have laid down your life in association with your ancestors. I will raise up and take a stand to bring to fruition with your offspring that which you have sown. Something more in the end without hesitation for you, for the benefit of the relationship. It will be extracted and withdrawn out of a small particle of your physiological nature. Yahweh literally took a bit of DNA from Dod so that when he brought Dod back, probably 3.5 years before he fulfilled Pesach Matzen Bekorim in 33 CE, year 4000 Yah, the body that he occupied that would be discarded was comprised of the same DNA signature. So after foreshadowing much of what we have read in the 89th Mizmor by speaking directly to his son through Nathan, Yahweh transitioned to speaking to us about him, because nothing is more essential to our well-being. And so I will establish his reign over his kingdom. He himself shall restore and rebuild Bana again, the family home Beeth again, for my name, and I will prepare and establish Kun again, the throne Eth Kise again of his kingdom forevermore as a continuing and restoring witness. Ad Olam, just like the 89th Mizmor. I was, I am, and I always will be for him as a father, and he was, is, and always will be for me as a son. This is one of the three places where Yahweh acknowledges, including the 89th Mizmor, that Dod is his beloved son, and he is Dod's father. He only says this of one individual, and of that individual, Dod, he says it three times. The Son of God is Dod. Period. End of conversation. So, when that which is associated with him is warped and perverted, twisted, such that it is contrary to what has been stated, I will resolve the dispute against him, vindicating him, deciding with him to expose and issue a condemnation against the weapons and staves wielded by rulers and nations of men, and against the fungus and plague that has fallen upon the descendants of Adam. He is speaking of our time and what God is soon to do to all of those who have miscast, misappropriated, misconstrued, and tried to counterfeit all that Dod represents. And herein is a perfect explanation of the religious crusade to transfer the promises made to the Messiah to a Christ or to a Bar Kokhba. God was not a fan. Therefore, my steadfast devotion, enduring love, commitment to the relationship, and unmitigated favor will not be removed from him, will not be disassociated or diminished regarding him, nor replaced, substituting another for him, as was the case when I turned away from and completely rejected associating with Shaul, whom to show the proper way I removed from your presence. Shemuel 2:7-15. Oh, so startling. It's has God saying that he is not going to reject his son and replace Dod with someone else. That makes the whole myth of Christian replacement foolology stupid. It means there cannot be and never was a Jesus Christ. That is a foolish myth. God said right here, it's not just his name. And yeah, I know his name. His name is Dode. I keep on telling you his name is Dode. He is my son. I am his father. It's his throne that will be established forever. Don't you forget it. And if you are among those who try to negate him, who try to speak out against him, who try to rob and counterfeit him, know that my wrath is justified against you. There can be no replacement foolology with statements like this that are prophetic of Dode, the Son of God. Yahweh is never going to substitute another for him. Lo, Shur, Men, Hu. And as for this other fellow, Shaul, well, the Shaul of Dode's day was long, long gone by the time the 89th Mizmor was conveyed, and he was even long gone at the time that 2 Samuel 7:15 was written. So it is very important that you know that, and that you know that almost everything, including demon possession and an aversion to Yahweh's anointed, his Messiah and his son, Dode, that was presented as part of the life of King Shaul, Saul, was prophetic of the disgusting demon-possessed life of the Jew-turned-Christian, the rabbi-turned-New Testament author, Shaul, Paul, who was also demon-possessed. One is a harbinger of the other. They are one in the same. The entire story of Shaul, the king, is told so that you might understand and reject the wannabe apostle, Shaul Paul. And that is the point that is being made here. He will be removed from Israel's presence because Paul has a guaranteed arrival date and Sheol, hell. Now, speaking directly to Dode again, God concludes, and so your family and your position of authority, your kingdom and reign, Malacca, are assured as it is trustworthy and dependable, firmly established, credible, and enduring forever as a continuing witness in my presence. Your throne and seat of honor will be established and sustained forevermore as part of this restoring testimony. Consistent with all of these words and in accord with the entire revelation, in this manner, Nathan accurately conveyed this to Dode. And with these words, we know for certain that Rabbi Akiba was wrong when he foisted a second false Messiah on the world with Bar Kokhba and started the religion of Rabbinic Judaism. We know that the self-proclaimed and egotistical demon-possessed author and inspiration of the majority of the Christian New Testament was flat out wrong when he substituted his Iesu Christu for the real McCoy, Dode, the actual Messiah and Son of God, whose throne is established forever and through whom God chose to enable the covenant. So this prophecy is about houses, who builds them and who lives in them. It is about Dode, who had a home, not Jesus, who was homeless throughout the myth scribed about him. It is about what God is going to do for, with, and through his beloved Son, the Messiah. It is also about seeds and thrones and who sows them and who sits upon them. And God identified this individual by name. And when it comes to such things, Yahweh is beside himself, annoyed to the point that he has made his point in such vivid ways. There should be not a single church, mosque, temple, or shrine called a house of God. And yet, men have erected millions of them. Just as God has never once asked us to worship him, bow down before him, or pray to him. He does not want us to build houses for him either. In fact, Yahweh is in the construction business. His primary expertise is in building the most extraordinary home in the universe, which is the universe itself, for his covenant family. Let him do what he wants to do, what he is far better than we are at doing. And let's enjoy what he wants to offer. Now, having returned to the prophecy where my journey with God began 23 years ago with Asher, associated with in 2 Samuel 7:14, we have found the obvious answer to whose home and throne is being established. Not that it wasn't obvious since Yahweh called out Dod by name. It is unequivocally delineated here in the 89th Mizmor, as well as to Samuel 7. It has been about Dod from the beginning all the way to the end. These prophetic statements fit together like hand in glove. It's Dod's place of honor. It's his kingdom, which will endure forever, as is affirmed throughout the prophets. Dod is the one whom Yahweh said, "He is my son, I am his father," something the 89th Mizmor will soon reiterate, just as 2 Samuel declared. It wasn't until many years after my initial quest to understand Asher in 2 Samuel 7:14 that I came to realize that God was speaking of Paul and what he would do to pervert and misappropriate Dod's legacy, doing more damage to it than anyone who has ever lived. And in this regard, Yahweh has put us on notice that he's going to defend his son and take retribution against the likes of Shaul Paul and those who have advanced Christian foolology. Now, along these lines, I'd like to reinforce something equally germane to our understanding of 2 Samuel 7 and our appreciation of Mizmor 89, both of which celebrate the father-son relationship paramount to the life of the king of Israel. Dod represents more than one individual man. Perhaps more than even Jacob, Dod is Israel. His joys, his heartaches, his ongoing battles with Goyim, his insights and errors, the benefits he enjoyed in concert with the covenant, and the consequences he endured when he ran afoul of it. They're all shared in common with the nation that he shepherded, defended, and brought together. So after this brief intermission, one instructed by the text of the Mizmor, which said for us to Shalah, we return to the voice of the psalmist. This portion of the song was written to counter the absurd notion that the gods of men, such as Adonai, the Lord, Hashem, Allah, and Jesus, are somehow analogous and comparable to Yahweh. Mankind's gods were modeled after the men who spoke for them. They were afforded characteristics which were sufficiently fearsome to command obedience by blending a plethora of seemingly plausible yet irrational notions. But the reason that these false gods all try to plagiarize and pilfer the Torah of and prophets of Yahweh is because they're inept. Allah was incapable, as was Jesus, of issuing a prophecy. So they simply borrowed prophecies that Yahweh had made, misrepresenting them. They were incapable of engaging and doing anything. So they took the stories, Muhammad, Paul, Akiba. They take the stories of where God engaged to interact with humankind, including creation, before man even existed. And they misappropriate them, and they give them to their pretend gods so that their pretend gods don't seem as inept as they actually are. The text of the 89th Mizmor, as we return to it, reads, "The spiritual realm knows and appreciates your wonderful and marvelous contributions, Yahweh, and also your trustworthiness in the community of the set apart." Mizmor Psalm 89:5. "By contrast, who in the skies of the material realm can be acquainted to Yahweh? Who is similar to or thinks like Yahweh among the sons of gods?" 89:6. It's a riddle with a ridiculously easy question to answer. The one who is acquainted with Yahweh, the one who thinks like Yahweh, especially among the children of God, is the one man named in this song. Dote. "He is the man after Yah's heart." The affirmation appears in Samuel. Listen to him. 1 Samuel 13:14, a passage that we will also consider before our time is through. And also refutes the ill effects of Christianity. And while everything we've heard is true, this proclamation was designed to set up a comparison between the wonderful accomplishments of Yahweh, which are acknowledged in heaven, contrasted with the meaningless myths attributed to the sons of gods conceived within the material realm, Dionysus and Jesus being among the imposters. The words men have attributed to them pale in comparison to the majesty of Yahweh's message. If asked to uphold a single most important aspect of Yahweh's character and his greatest contribution to humankind, I'd say trustworthiness. Without it, nothing else matters. Proving it is the purpose of the Nabi, as they validate the credibility of Yah's inspiration, enabling the very purpose of the Torah, because without guidance, there can be no trust. And with it, contradictory scriptures and false gods are rendered moot. When Yahweh validates that he exists and that he inspired the text that we are reading by consistently accurate prophecy, it renders all other texts obsolete. And it provides an affirmation that we can know Yahweh as he actually is and trust his inspiration of these texts. Yahweh's contributions are many. He created an enormously large, complex, and yet functional six-dimensional universe. He conceived life, writing a three-dimensional language to propagate countless possibilities. He gave us free will and a conscience to wield it properly. He designed us so that we would be able to understand him and respond. Then he not only gave us his Torah and his prophets, he offered his son, who also fulfilled every promise. We aren't explicitly told, but I think that the community of the set apart represents the covenant family. The covenant is not only Kodesh set apart, but our Heavenly Father's children are the principal beneficiaries of this steadfast commitment to the truth. And just in the previous statement, Yahweh acknowledged that he was establishing the covenant through Dodd. Along the most ignorant and irrational notions that are popularized by humankind is that we all worship the same God. Well, the actual God begs to differ. Religious gods are fundamentally different from one another, and so are their scriptures and names, making this religiously unifying belief ludicrous. What's more, the traits common amongst false gods are universally foreign to Yahweh. Said another way, aligning our thinking with Yahweh necessitates a willingness to reject all religious presumptions, one of which is that God does not want to be worshipped. He would be psychotic if he created an inferior being to tell him that he was really, really special and would bow down to him and croak out praises for him. God, if he, even a psychopath would grow weary of that in a matter of hours, much less an eternity. 89:7 reads, God is inspiring and awesome. God is inspiring and he is awesome. He is well-regarded and awe-inspiring, exceedingly productive and accomplished in the council of the set apart ones, of those separated and exalted, tremendously great while inspiring reverence and respect beyond all those around him. To know Yahweh is to respect him. I would go so far as to say to love him, most certainly to trust him. To understand Yahweh is to revere him for what he has done. Yahweh, God of the vast array of spiritual implements, who and what is comparable to your awesome power and extraordinary gifts, which are all around you, Yahweh? Because you, Yahweh, including your unwavering commitment to the truth, are unlike anything else. Mizmor, lyrics to sing, Psalm 89:8. It's another rhetorical question, and yet as few as one in a million know the answer. Most don't even know where to look for it. I dare say there's not even one in a million that know the question exists or that God asked it by inspiring it. This is now the fourth time that we have seen emunah, trustworthiness, used to either describe Yahweh or to affirm that it is among his gifts to us. It appears in Psalm 89:1, 89:2, 89:5, and now here in Mizmor 89:8. Not surprisingly, we will encounter emunah four more times, Mizmor 89:14, 24, 33, and finally in 49, bringing the total to 8, the number equated to that which is infinite and eternal. Speaking of emunah, Dode's life and lyrics provide the antidote for Pauline Christianity and Rabbinic Judaism. Trust is the remedy for faith. Those who know rely, those who don't believe. Trust is empowering, enlightening, enriching, and liberating, while faith devalues, bewilders, depreciates, and ensnares. Having now established the proper vantage point to appreciate Yahweh, the psalmist specifically targets a pervasive and improper approach, one whose destructive nature arises from the sea, when the sea is a metaphor for Goyim, or the land is a metaphor for Yehudim. It reads, "You have conveyed vivid parallels and parables over the raging devastation and presumptive arrogance of the sea. When its turbulent and surging waves rise up in deceit, you expose them and you stop them." 89:9. The most popular belief systems among Gentiles are Roman Catholicism, Orthodox and Protestant Christianity, Sunni and Shia Islam, progressive socialist humanism, which we now just called progressivism, and Hinduism. From God's perspective, they are not only presumptive, holding unwarranted status, and deceitful, they are predicted to become ever more turbulent. They will collectively rise up and seek to erode Israel based upon strong undercurrents, which have contaminated the people's thinking, deceiving them. You know, for example, the majority have been led to believe that there is a place called Palestine and that oppressive Jews are occupying a land which belongs to these Palestinians. Yeah. So many times I've endeavored to expose this myth, but only Yah can stop these miserable parasites for trying to annihilate Jews under this despicable lie. Well, now that the stage has been set, the cast must be introduced before the battle begins. And in this drama, there is a villain and there is a hero. It reads, "You humbled and crushed that which is comparable to the reprehensible and deadly nature of the pretentious pride and stormy arrogance of the boisterous afflictor and his false god. And your empowered and fortified Zeroa, protective shepherd and sacrificial lamb, you isolate and separate your adversaries." Yes, anyone who tries to rob Dod of his due as the Messiah and Son of God, as the former and returning King of Yisrael and the universe, as our Savior, as the prophet who foretold all this and more, those who have spoken against him, whether it be in Judaism, Christianity, or Islam, are going to find death, their souls crushed, their pride and stormy arrogance will no longer prevail, nor will their dreams of false gods. Because Yahweh has empowered and fortified his Zeroa. This is the term that is so essential to our understanding of who Dod is, who I am, what we're offering, what God is doing through us. Zeroa has three principal meanings. Four max, strong arm. Moshe, for example, was the strong arm of God, not only leading the people to safety into the promised land and away from slavery and Mitzrayim. He's the strong arm who wrote the Torah, scribed it for us. He's also the protective shepherd that protected the flock all the way through the wilderness. The next and most important definition, the definition that's used throughout the Torah, Zeroa is the sacrificial lamb. Dod is the sacrificial lamb of God. And the third, based on the Zera root that we shared earlier, Zeroa is one who cultivates the harvest, making them as productive as possible. And so we have Moshe, we have Dod, we have myself, all categorized by this marvelous title that now appears here in the 89th Mizmor. There are very few things that I could share with you more important than appreciating what Zeroa means and what Yahweh is conveying to us when he shares it with us. The Zeroa is his protective shepherd. It is his strong arm. It's the one who prevails and is effective. The one who is fully resolved to the overall ability to accomplish the mission. The remarkably important and impactful individual of action, who as a leader and a fighter is engaged as a shepherd among his sheep, always fruitful in his ways, especially when sowing the seeds which advance the purpose of the arm of God, of his shepherd and sacrificial lamb. You know, I was chatting with my wife earlier today and a good friend, Yoel, who was helping us with some technology. And we were talking about the Adama Parah. And I said, you know, just as Dod, as the Zeroa, as the sacrificial lamb, as the Pesach El, never became a lamb when sacrificed on Pesach. It was a man. His body was sacrificed in the role of the lamb as a metaphor. And his soul then carried our guilt into Sheol the next day on Matzah. The same thing is true with the Adama Parah. there isn't going to be a red cow. As the anima para, anima meaning the bloodied red man of the earth, para, who has been productive and fruitful and who will continue to be productive and fruitful. The sacrifice of the anima para is of me, as you're seeing me now. Just as Dode reconstituting, having a reconstituted body from the DNA that Yahweh extracted from him, served as the Passover lamb, fulfilling the metaphor of the lamb with a human body. The same thing will be true with the metaphor of the red heifer. They are metaphors. They're symbols. They're ways that people from all ages can visualize what God is saying. But I thought it was important to share that with you while we're speaking of the Zeroah, because, again, I'm one of the three. I'm the least significant of the three, but not at this moment. Because at this moment, if the job that Yahweh is trying to accomplish through me and with me on your behalf is not accomplished, then you do not know Yahweh's name. Then you do not know the conditions of the covenant. Then you do not know or understand the seven Moed Mikre, who fulfilled them, when they were fulfilled, when Yahweh is returning. You would not be able to participate in the Shavuah harvest, nor in the Teruah in gathering. You would have no understanding of the sacrifice of the Adama Para and be ill prepared for Dode's return, not even know that Dode is returning on Yom Kippurim for the family reunion, or that he is returning with his father, Yahweh, such that we can all enjoy camping out with God in an earth that is restored to the conditions found in Eden. You would not know any of these things and could not capitalize on them if it were not for what Yahweh was doing with his third Zeroah. So while Moshe's character and accomplishments were sublime, while Dode is the greatest man who ever lived, God's chosen one, his son, our Messiah and King, today, the final of the three Zeroah is responsible for helping you understand who Yahweh is, what he accomplished through his son, what he is offering to each of you as it relates to his covenant, and how you can participate. This is Mizmor Lyrics to Sing, Psalm 89:10. And we'll take a break here, and we'll continue our review of Dode's song, The Greatest Lyrics Ever Sung, in the next episode of the Yahweh Blog. I am your host, Craig Wynn.